At this time, the Department of Talks at the Columbia Network brings you from China a talk by Madam Chiang Kai-shek, wife of the President of the Central War Council of the Chinese Republic, Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek. Madam Chung was scheduled to speak over the Columbia Network 10 days ago, but could not be heard then due to the destruction of the radio transmitter in Shanghai. We take you now to Nanking, China.
COA, Central Broadcasting Station, Nanking, China. Dr. Wang Chongwei, Chinese Minister of Foreign Affairs, will introduce to you Madam Chiang Kai-shek. I take pleasure in presenting Madam Chiang Kai-shek, who will speak to our latest friends on the subject of Japanese aggression. Madam Chiang is most qualified to speak on this subject, not so much because she is wife of the Generalissimo of China, as because he is taking a leading part in our momentous struggle. Setting an example to all Chinese women, she has held on to her duty as the first lady of the land. She gives encouragement and blessing to our gallant soldiers. She is the leading spirit behind the nationwide movement for the organization of Chinese women for Red Cross work, for the relief of the needy, for raising funds, and for other duties to help the men folk at the front. Madam Chiang will now speak to you, Madam Chiang.
It is rather difficult for me to speak to the American people today because my mind still holds painful recollections of tragic accidents in and near Shanghai which caused death to some, injury to others, and suffering to many American and other residents. Please leave me when I tell you that both the Generalissimo and I deeply deplore those accidents and grieve with those who have been bereaved and who have suffered, especially as among those killed and injured were personal friends of ours. Our government, in so far as possible, is doing its best to prevent a recurrence of such accidents, which could never have happened, however, had it not been for the fact that the Japanese brought war into Shanghai by using the international settlement as a base for military operations. And they brought war to China to destroy her before she could complete the reorganization work which has been going on in recent years with such great promise and success. Out of a united China was emerging an orderly state. The Japanese did not want them, and are therefore starting in many places to destroy. They have utter disregard for the security of the lives and property of both foreigners and Chinese on the sea of Shanghai. Any American living in China could tell you that wherever the Japanese congregate in China, they have systematically set a basis for the destruction of our people. They have done so by military action, by the demoralizing effects of opium and narcotics, or by the instigation of plots to undermine the authority of our central government. The Japanese military lie to their people, and they lie to the world. They seize upon any excuse, to justify every evil thing they plan to do. For example, they are now publishing gross calumnies that we Chinese are spreading cholera germs among their troops at Shanghai, and that they intend to take reprisals. What reprisals? Gas? And why? Is it because for 5 weeks now, they have not been able to bring China to their knees as they boasted? They have used a concentrated weight on the most modern implements of war, navy, artillery, air force, tanks, and army. But our soldiers are still holding them. You can see by what Japan is now doing in China. She is sinister, ruthless, well-armed, well-organized, and acting on a preconceived plan. For years, she has been deploring for this very attempt to conquer China, even if she has to annihilate our people to do so. Seriously, no other nation seems to care. Is it because a flood of calculated falsehoods that Japan broadcasts does this to do? Or is it that she has been able to hypnotize the statesmen of the world? It seems to have secured death by a spellbound silence, by uttering a simple magical formula. This is not a war, but merely an incident. important declaration by the Japanese premier, Prince Kunoichi, on August 28th, that Japan intends to beat China to her knees, so that she may no longer have the spirit to fight. Does not seem to have had any effect in awakening the world to a realization of the catastrophe which is now being developed. It was to avert such a catastrophe that the great powers signed a nine-power treaty, which was certainly created to safeguard China from invasion by Japan. They signed the Kellogg Peace Pact to prevent war, and they organized the League of Nations to make it doubly certain that aggressive nations would be prevented from inflicting unjustified harm upon their weaker fellows. But, strange to say, all these treaties fail to have to crumble to dust in a way that has not hitherto been equal in history. Working back, all that complex structure under international law, which was gradually built up to regulate the conduct of war and protect non-combatants, seems to have crashed with peace. So, we have a reversion to the day of the savages, when the stronger tried to exterminate the weaker, not only to kill their friends and warriors, but also their very families, their women, and their children. That is what Japan is now trying to do in China. But it is the civilized nations who have really committed this collapse of treaty and this 20th century revival of the wholesale brutal murder of innocent civilians. They allowed it to begin in China in 1931, when Japan seized Manchuria. They permitted it to be continued in 1932 at Shanghai, when Japan bombed the sleeping population of Shanghai. When they now acquiesce in its resumption all over China on a gigantic scale. The consequence of all this is that the Japanese now feel free to destroy schools and cultural institutions wherever they can. Already, the Nankai University and the Women's Normal School and the Engineering College at Tianjin have been wiped out completely. What was left demolished by bombs was later on destroyed by Japanese with kerosene. They attacked the University of Shanghai, known as the Shanghai Baptist College, by air bombs and artillery. Demolished the Tianjin University at Wuchang, bombed the Central University of Nanjing, and the Baldwin Girls' School at Nantang. Added to this, they deliberately bombed and destroyed the American Mission Hospital at Tungtao, the Chinese Red Cross Hospital at Chengdu, and various Red Cross ambulances. They also struck from the air the British ambassador and tried to bomb him as well, but with brazen effrontery, their foreign minister now says that no Japanese planes would do such a thing. Fortunately, the British military attaché identified the plane and is able to disprove the lie that is now being told by the Japanese government. Yet, such calculated ruination to life and property can be done before the social facilities have developed. That is going to happen now that the Japanese have begun to carry out efforts to push China completely. Whatever will be the end, a beginning has been made to demolish everything Chinese, as well as to destroy with savage blows those valuable American religious and cultural enterprises that have been erected in China in the course of years. Even American mission institutions, contributed to so liberally by the people of America, which have done so much for the progress of China, are destined to be severely crippled in their wish, if not destroyed, so the Japanese have their way, since the Japanese condemn them as being the first three places of history existence. Indeed, how intense is that hope that the events upon wrecking or eradicating all foreign influences, cultural as well as commercial, and the sooner that it is understood abroad, the better. In all this, I grow up here for the safety of American and European women and children. We Chinese greatly value the services that missionaries of all countries have given our people. And it is therefore with sincere regret that I find myself compelled to assist in arranging for their evacuation within the immediate future. People in America and Europe may rest assured that the national government of China will do everything in its power to see that those who are escaping the menace of war are transported to the coast, though naturally some will wish to stay and suffer with us. We wish to defend them, but so that we may not be able
even to defend ourselves, Japan blockades our coast, and demands that the nations put a stop to supplying us with arms and munitions, while she herself may be supplied with all the instruments of murder that she desires. Surely, such a monstrous demand has never been put to the world before, and we hope it will not be entertained. But to make it, Japan must be singularly confident of her influence and power over the world, especially as in addition to trying to get international assistance to tie our hands, she now declares her intention to bring China to her knees as if she were sure no one would say her name. Maybe no one will, but if the nations become accessories to this mass murder and criminal destruction, then civilization has surely reached its end. Yet China, for all her terms of cowardice, so unprepared as she is, has decided no longer to put up aggression, brutalities, and insults of so great a time, and is fighting for her very existence. In this fight, I wish to say that the loyal support of our compatriots abroad will be a great factor in our final victory. On behalf of the Generalissimo, therefore, I wish to thank our overseas Chinese for their generous contributions to the war, and to assure them that we in China are striving to prove worthy of their unfailing cooperation and encouragement in the defense of the land of our ancestors. At this moment, I also wish to thank the many foreign friends of China who, by their expressions of sympathy and moral support, have heartened us in our task. Foreign sympathy is necessary, for we depend upon the wisdom and justice of the nation to save the world and us from the consequences of a calculated falsehood daily emanating from Japan, and hope that our cause and our efforts will secure the support of the people which China has so faithfully adhered to and upheld. The military of Japan have already shown the world their contempt for any codes of international honor. They have, in addition, dragged a map of their own samurai in the mud and have cast their own stained Bushido, their boasted creed of chivalrous conduct, into the gutters. And they do not seem to be ashamed that the people of the world should witness such a betrayal. The reason, no doubt, is that they are convinced that the powers dare not oppose them. So they are proceeding with plans of conquest, confident that they will be able to devastate China and, in time, drive out Western cultural and commercial influences, so that if we Chinese cannot prevent them, they may erect upon the ashes of China a world-shaking Japanese continental empire. It will not be founded upon international ethics, but Japan has already crippled those, and militarized force. At least, they expect to control all lands where the Oriental races live, and eventually determine international conduct and policies. With that extravagant aim in view, is it any wonder that Japan asks how China dares to have the spirit to fight? Well, might Prince Premier of Japan ask the question? Hitherto, it has been China who has traveled what the rest of the world has wondered why she would not fight. Now we have an ironic picture of China fighting, not only for her sovereign rights and existence, but also for the sanctity of treaty, while the foreign nations watch their rights and interests being destroyed and their people put to flight. To see the great powers accepting such a situation must be regarded by the Japanese military as a delightfully encouraging spectacle, for they seem to have at last been able with no difficulty to sweep Occidental prestige clean from the boards of Orient. And we wonder, does this indicate the fall of civilization? Look at the mass murders of Chinese in various places by bombs and by the naval guns mounted on miles of men of war anchored in the sheltered harbor of Shanghai, by machine guns and by rifles. Look at the homes and the businesses that have been swept up in savage flames or been blasted into dust. Look at the small miles of blood-stained debris with dead. Look at the fleeing thousands of Chinese and foreigners, screaming, panic-stricken, running for their lives. Indeed, hundreds of thousands of Chinese, mothers and children, homeless, foodless, bereft of everything, their homes shattered and burning behind them.
You have just heard a special broadcast from Nanking, China, with Madam Chiang Kai-shek, the American educated wife of China's foremost war leader, Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek, who this evening brought you first-hand impressions of the Sino-Japanese conflict now raging in the city of Shanghai and throughout the wide regions of the Wusung River area. Madam Chiang Kai-shek's scheduled broadcast for last week could not be heard due to the bombing and destruction of radio transmission lines in Shanghai. This was a special Trans-Pacific program by Columbia's Department of Talks. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.